Okay, hello and welcome to tonight's Radio Edu Talk. My name's David Noble and I'm currently at work in Aberdour, but I'm delighted tonight to be joined by an esteemed panel as we discuss the professional nature of teaching over the next 45 minutes or so. I'm delighted to welcome to the show tonight Rosa Murray of the GTC, Gordon Kirk of USET, Joan Mackay of Education Scotland, and David Cameron, former Director of Education and now Education Consultant. Before we get into this topic of the professional nature of teaching, I can let you know that it's possible to get in touch with the show tonight if you're listening to the live stream. You can do it in two ways. We don't actually have a phone in tonight because I've forgotten to renew my phone number for Skype, but you can get in touch by email or Twitter. So the email address, if you've got questions for the panel or a comment to make on what you've heard, it is edutalker, that's EDUALKR, at hotmail.co.uk. Alternatively, if you're on Twitter, you can just post a message up on Twitter, and if you include the hashtag edutalk, then I'll be able to pick up what you have to say and pose that to the panel. Before I introduce the first of several questions for the panel to consider tonight, I'd like to first of all ask each panellist to briefly introduce themselves. So if you don't mind, I'd like to start with David Cameron and then Rosa Murray.
Hi David, thanks for that. I think you've already introduced me well enough. I used to be something and now I'm something else. But I've been doing a lot of work around the whole business of the professionalisation of teachers, and it's one of my real main hopes and ambitions, the curriculum for excellence, that will actually enable teachers to have that professionalism that I believe they're entitled to, and which I also believe makes them much more effective in encouraging learning.
Okay. Hi there, David. Thanks for that. And yeah, my name's Rosa Murray. I work in the General Teaching Council as an education advisor in professional learning and development. I am a teacher at heart, and I think that's really important. And at the heart of all I believe is making things better in learning experiences for children, and in fact, particularly those children who perhaps have the most difficult circumstances. And what I do, I've worked around the professional standards, particularly chartered teacher and the standard for headship, and I'm currently involved in the revision of the professional standards and involved in the subgroup too with the Donaldson groups looking at lifelong learning.
Okay. Thanks, Rosa, and thanks, David. And just now, I'd like to ask Gordon and Joan to briefly introduce themselves.
Hello, Gordon Kirk here. I was a former teacher and lecturer, and then for many years principal of Murray House College of Education in Edinburgh. When Murray House merged with the University of Edinburgh, I became the Dean of the Faculty of Education of the University, and for recent years I've been the Academic Secretary to the University's Council for the Education of Teachers, which is the kind of umbrella body that tries to represent all 96 teacher education institutions across the UK.
Hi, and I'm Joan Mackay, working with Education Scotland, and I am an inspector within the organisation. Have been for a good number of years, I'm not going to tell you how many, because it comes as a shock to me when I think about it. Like everybody else, I think the important thing is that, you know, everybody talking today is fundamentally a teacher at heart. That's what we've all said. And, you know, for me, it's still this huge privilege when I go into people's schools and establishments to watch what goes on in a classroom, in a school, in my job now. It still gives me an enormous buzz, and I find myself saying time and again to groups of especially students and people entering the profession, I still believe it's one of the best jobs to be doing. So very committed to teachers and the professionals.
Okay, thank you, Joan and Gordon. Moving straight on to the first question, what I'll do is I'll pose this question, but in the context of the second and third questions, because I think they possibly do tie in, but it also gives our panelists a heads up on what's going to come next. So, Our first three questions to consider are, and start in this particular order. First of all, what does the term the professional culture of teaching mean? What are we getting at when we use that term? And kind of following on from that, and you may want to answer this question together, I suppose, if you wish. Around professional identity, what does a teacher look like in the 21st century? And what does a professional culture of teaching look like to the child or young person that teacher? Now, always when kind of working with online audio, it's important to try and get things to be free-flowing, but we appreciate that we're all in five different locations. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask David Cameron to come in first, and Rosa to come on, come in immediately after David finishes talking, and then I'll ask Gordon and finally Joan to come in after that. After Joan's spoken, then I won't be jumping in, because I would give panellists a chance to pick up on something that a fellow panellist has said, or to supplement their own initial answer. So hopefully we can get a kind of free-flowing conversation going before we move on to the later questions. Just before David starts, again, if you want to get in touch with the show, you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or if you are on Twitter, if you post a tweet and use the hashtag edutalk, then your message or question will be able to get passed on to the panel between now and around about 5:15. David Cameron.
Well, you've now done such a good job of briefing everybody, I've forgotten what I'm compliment, David. Remind me.
Sorry about that. What does the term the professional culture of teaching mean? What are we getting at when we use that term?
Right. I think when we use the term, what we're looking at is a culture where teachers have a high degree of autonomy, and that they honour that autonomy by being reflective, by taking a responsibility for evaluating their own practice. I think we are looking at a culture where people engage with research, not in a purely academic nor arid way, but they take account of that to think about how effectively they're working with young people. I think it's a culture where people reflect on what they're doing. They reflect not only on what's happening within schools and within learning environments, but they reflect on what's happening outside of schools and what, if you like, the world is that they're preparing young people for, and that they take a high level of responsibility for achieving that within an environment where they're well supported and where other educationalists, in Lauren Stenhouse terms, recognise their importance and do all that they can to support teachers, because only they and their colleagues in schools are in a position to deliver effective learning.
Okay, thanks for that, David. Rosa, would you like to come in at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've covered a lot of points there, David, that I wanted to bring up, so I'll try and focus on some others. What I was looking at was really taking from Donaldson the reconceptualisation of a teacher and teaching. And in the revision of the standards, we've centred on what does a teacher look like? And if we can begin to understand that and kind of close that teacher, then that informs professional learning development, university programmes, etc. Just to kind of go through some of the ideas that we've come up with, at the centre of this is definitely teachers as learners, and teachers as perhaps who take inquiry as a stance to inquire about their aspects of their practice in their learning, and crucially how that impacts upon themselves as professionals and onto their learning. So we're looking at teachers that are critically reflecting, engaging in their practice and in their learning, who have a deep subject knowledge, who are knowledge creators, and researchers you've mentioned, David, so I won't kind of go on about that. But I think the other aspect I want to bring into this for teacher today and for our children today and our young people is that we're working and living within local and global contexts. I think it's really important to keep that in mind, and that we really want to be developing teachers and young people who are confident to, in their knowledge and understanding, to face the challenges that society faces today locally and globally. You know, whether that's about the economies of our world, the politics of our world, but also about natural resources, And really I'm talking there about Learning for Sustainability too. So it's really multifaceted.
Thanks, Rosa. And at this point, I'd like to bring in Gordon Kirk.
Well, I'm in a position where I find myself in agreement with Rosa and David. Except for me, I think it would be helpful if we broadened the notion of what a professional culture is. For me, it's possible to think of the teacher as someone with a deep knowledge of a subject or subjects and with great expertise in engaging learners in these subjects. It's also, though, teaching is also the kind of activity that is based on a wide range of ideas and assumptions and values and commitments. And it's all these taken together that make up for me what I call the professional culture of teaching. Let me give you one or two examples. One example would be that the teacher should be carefully selected for admission to the profession. Now, there was a time when we used to say that it was easy to get into teaching. All you needed was 2 hires and a vaccination. Now, these days are long since past. Now, quite properly, a lot of time is devoted to ensuring that those who are selected for teaching are suited to teaching. A second big assumption that's made is that teachers should be professionally trained for their work. It's not sufficient just to have a deep understanding of a subject or a group of subjects. The teacher needs to have a rich understanding of the ways in which young people can be encouraged to engage in the study of a subject. In addition to that, I think the professional culture of teaching assumes that there's a range of commitments that teachers have. For example, they have a commitment to the well-being of the pupils in their care. There's a commitment, as David said, to evaluating what they are doing, to looking at how effective they have been, to trying to find ways in which they can improve the quality of the education that they provide for their pupils. There's a commitment to forms of professional collaboration, to engaging in the induction of new members of the teaching profession. So all of these things seem to me to, when you look at them in the round, to constitute the professional culture of teaching. And it's these values and commitments and beliefs and ideas that really give point to teaching as an undertaking.
Thank you, Gordon. I'm going to bring in Joan Mackay now, and when Joan finishes speaking, I won't come back in. As I say, I'm going to let Rosa, Gordon or David to come back in with further comments or questions on what they've heard. So, Joan Mackay.
I'm not going to expand much of what's been said because I don't have any issue with any of it. I suppose what I wanted to go into makes is the whole notion of professional culture, of where the teacher works and how that then supports the individual, because a lot of the comments that have been made are describing the individual teacher and what we want and what we see and what we aspire to. There's also a whole dynamic about the professional culture, and obviously I can say the professional culture, for instance, of a school, the professional culture of a staffdom, and, you know, how all of these things are mutually supportive. The job of teachers, as recognised by Teaching Scotland's Future and us on a day-to-day basis, is a hugely challenging task requiring a multiple set of skills. And what's interesting is where in a school people get the balance across the team. So they recognise the bits that I'm good at, the bits I'm not so good at, and they manage to make that work effectively. So you have a professional culture that, to me, is bigger than an individual. So that's a bit that always intrigues me, and the difference you feel, for instance, when you go into school and that you see and the impact that has been on children and young people. That's one of the areas that intrigues me, and how we can get that more consistently for every teacher, so that they're in an environment which is a culture of professionalism.
Could I take up the notion of the professional autonomy of the teacher that David mentioned? It seems to me this is at the heart of the professional culture of teacher, of teaching. Some people believe that autonomy means doing whatever comes up your back. Now, teaching really isn't the kind of profession where we're needing mavericks. Teachers are very, very strongly constrained by a whole range of obligations that they have to meet. They are employees, for example. They are members of the school staff. They are members of the professional body. So they operate within a network of obligations and constraints. One of the most obvious of these constraints is the curriculum. Now, I maintain that it's that the curriculum is something that should be determined by the community as a whole. It's a way in which the community says, look, these things are important. It's vital that all our young people are taught in each of these areas of learning or areas of study. That's a matter for public determination. But how people go about teaching is a matter for the professional ingenuity and resourcefulness of the teacher. Teachers have been described as specialists in human development through learning. And while there might be principles of learning and ways of engaging pupils, at the end of the day, decisions, practical judgments have to be made by teachers with individual pupils in individual classrooms. And the community gives the teacher, has trust that the teacher will use his or her best insights to make learning more and more effective. So, indeed, some people would maintain that the curriculum for excellence is an ideal context for the professional autonomy of teachers. It's not a straitjacket. It's not a script that teachers have to learn. It's a framework within which they have to deploy their skills and to use their initiative in making learning interesting for pupils.
Yeah, and if I may, I'm really grateful to Joan and to Gordon for these comments. I think there's a couple of things that are really important. Gordon's absolutely right. I think the main professional skill that the teacher brings is that ability to broker between that which is deemed important to learn and the needs and abilities of the young people with whom they're working to learn that. And I think it's right to come back in and have a focus on that. I think Joan's also absolutely right when she says that a discussion about professional culture shouldn't just be about the professional responsibilities and roles of teachers, and that we do need to open up the discussion and get beyond that and look at what a culture, a professional culture would be. And it kind of ties back, I think, into Gordon's comment that professional culture needs to go beyond the school. We need to make sure that there's a recognition of what the role of the teacher is. We need to make sure that there's a proper respect, I think, at all levels for what happens in schools, and to make sure that we define clearly how we determine the success of that and that we take responsibility for delivering in relation to that.
Yeah. One of the issues that's going through my head at the moment is that, and I utterly agree that professional autonomy is at the heart of what in my head is, I'm listening to teachers in schools who don't feel and experience that professional autonomy, although they may wish it. And it's a real kind of competing discourse in a sense. I think that's how Judith Sachs refers to it, between encouraging and developing a wanting to professional autonomy. And then, Gordon, what you were talking about, there are things that actually have to be done. And sometimes teachers feel really done too, and that they can't let this autonomy flourish and their knowledge and expertise and pedagogical expertise flourish because they feel sometimes constrained by targets or by specific things they're being asked to do. So there's a real kind of dilemma going on, which is one that I think is a healthy tension. But I think if you ask most teachers, that's probably what they would say.
Yes, I agree strongly with that. And indeed, not just in Scotland. There is a huge public interest and strong political interest and in raising levels of achievement in schools, and testing regularly to ensure that pupils achieve particular standards. Now, that regime of frequent testing can seriously come into conflict with a teacher's sense of what is educationally in the best interest of their pupils. There's no doubt about it that there's a conflict, but I believe those of us involved in the education of teachers have to go on insisting that there are broader objectives in schools that extend beyond achievement in tests. Important though these undoubtedly are, and teachers should be encouraged to provide pupils with that kind of richer and broader education.
I'm going to ask Joan to come in a moment and invite Joan to comment on what she's heard in relation to the first question. Just before you come in though, Joan, in case you want to move on to the next question, I'll just pose this to the panel, and I appreciate that it does very much tie to what we've been talking about so far. So the second and third questions are around about, you know, what does a teacher look like in the 21st century, and what would this, I suppose, in developing or improving professional culture of teaching, what would that actually look like, I suppose, day to day to a child or young person within a school? So, Joan, feel free to move on and answer these questions or continue the discussion up till now.
Yeah, well, I suppose I wanted to pause a wee bit and just almost query Gordon's notion of a testing culture, because that's not what I recognise, and I maybe that's coming something from, you know, perceptions of the drive towards attainment. And I mean, he responded to that in relation to the teachers living almost within this push-pull thing, you know, about the constraints and things they feel they have to deliver, as well as the notion of autonomy. There's lots of things surrounding teachers. I mean, how do they make decisions about where to go? I mean, knowledge has gone way beyond teachers. They're no longer the holders of knowledge, and there's so many debates we could have about that. And I think that's where the whole identity of what being a teacher is about sits in a kind of a quite hard to determine a place at the moment. Now, I don't recognise the culture of testing per se, and I don't think that's helpful. I think probably if what we mean is that there's a feeling that they're having to over-assess, well, we can debate that in some other forum, not here. But I suppose one thing that intrigues me, of course, is coming back, is what's it like to be a child and a young person in a school today, and what does the whole professional culture mean to them? Now, you might not necessarily use this kind of language in a debate with young people, but of course young people have almost always the best views of who the most effective teachers are. And I don't think we pay enough attention to that, and I don't think we let young people enough into the debate about that. And what's, you know, how often do teachers themselves use their, you know, their clients, the people they're working with in the debate, to give them the feedback that would be most helpful? And we have moved long beyond the day of pupil councils only being allowed to talk about the colour of the dustbins or the what was sold in the tuck shop. We are now seeing, you know, children getting engaged in debates about learning and what kinds of learning work for them. And that can only be good. But that's an area I would like to see far more development around. And a bit of easing from the teacher-child relationship to let that happen, because you know it seems so apparent and so obvious that the children and young people themselves and their perceptions and what they get out of the whole process of learning should be fed back into the bigger picture of that learning culture in a school. Okay. A very long way of seeing what I'm trying to say, but
well, if I bring David Cameron in at this point,
could I just quickly?
Yes, sorry.
Just to respond immediately to Joan's point, when I spoke about a culture of testing, I wasn't using that comment to describe development in Scotland. I was looking internationally. There is, south of the border, for example, in the United States of America, there is a relentless pressure to improve test scores. And that's the kind of movement, I'm not saying it exists in Scotland, that becomes the real enemy of professional autonomy of teachers.
Yeah, thanks for that, Gordon. I mean, that's great, because that's an offer I recognise, and I think in Scotland we have to resist that in all ways. Yeah.
I think if you ask teachers, one of the challenges and barriers to a lot of their autonomy in learning is that they feel that they're teaching to a test and that they have targets. Now, we may be trying to improve that culture, but I still think it's quite dominant and that we test our children an awful lot. And I think one of the other big barriers to their autonomy has been the feeling of innovations coming in and new ideas without any research or informed basis behind them, and teachers doing things that they may intuitively know this isn't good, but they feel they have to do it. And they don't know why they're doing it. And we need much more links of theory and practice within our professional autonomous culture, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think we also need to be a lot clearer about when that whole area of discussion is a defence and an avoidance strategy, mm-hmm. and where it's genuine. Mm-hmm. The Jones point's an interesting one, because I do think there is still an enormous emphasis on attainment, and I think that where we don't have sufficient testing, schools are tending to buy them in and then complaining about the volume of assessment. So I think there are all sorts of issues about how far we create our own problems around these things in this country, and I do think there is very much what Pasi Selberg, the Finnish guy, talks about as GERM, as a movement for education. Improvement through target setting and attainment. I do think there's a lot in that, but I do think also that one of the characteristics of being a professional is something about confidence and courage. And we do have, I think, real difficulties in building the courage and confidence of teachers, and building courage and confidence within the system. It's really hard if you're a teacher. You feel responsible for the results that young people get. You feel responsible for the outcomes. You do everything that you can, I think, to make sure that they achieve them. And the things that you do aren't always in accord with what your principles as a professional fall into coaching, you fall into revision, you fall into all sorts of things. There are really difficult dilemmas, I think, for teachers professionally. But there is something very important about having both courage and confidence in the system. And one of the keys to that, I think, is what Gordon's spoken about and what Joan's spoken about, and that's accountability to the community that we serve, whether it's the learners, whether it's the wider community. But it's that sense of accountability and giving the community that kind of voice to impact in the development of professionalism.
Well, I'll come on to, I'll try and package a couple of questions at this point to maybe follow on from what David said there and Joan earlier on. So, and I'll maybe ask Gordon Kirk to come in first on this. So it kind of ties in with one of David Cameron's questions. What is the role of pupils, parents and the wider community in establishing and ensuring a culture of professionalism? And I wonder if that, some ideas might spark off from that, following on from what Joan said, which seemed to be about maybe you would recognise a professional culture of teaching within a school because the child, the young person is heavily involved or consulted or listened to or engaged in some way with individual teachers or with the various adults within a school. So I think there's a couple of kind of things in there. I know it's a kind of long-winded question, but in terms of how the wider community and young people in particular become engaged in setting future expectations or the future kind of, I don't think the word was identikit, Rosa, but that kind of, that particular sort of dressing of the 21st century teacher. So there's a kind of lot to unpack in there, but I'll ask maybe Gordon Kirk to come in first and then Joan.
I think it would be very fair to say that the job of teaching has become much more complex and much more demanding, partly because of the heightened expectations that the public have and the parents have about this. Well, now, of course, it is right that public parents and politicians have demanding expectations of what schools will do and what they will achieve. But it seems to me that we need to exercise some care here. There is no doubt that classrooms are much more diverse than they used to be. There is no doubt that the range of that the changes taking place in the community are rapid, and that if there is an expectation that schools must prepare people for the demands of contemporary living, that's a lot to ask. It's right at the schools that these expectations should be there, but it certainly makes the job of teaching much more difficult and demanding than it used to be. Somebody described the tradition of secondary schooling in Scotland as incorrigibly academic. Now, an incorrigibly academic curriculum isn't going to deliver the goods nowadays. Because if you look alone at the difficulties that we encounter in Scotland, for example, with regard to the health and well-being of our young people, there's a huge range of ways in which the school curriculum has to be attuned to wider social objectives than academic achievement, although academic, undoubtedly, it is important. Now, this is a roundabout way of saying that the public and parents, the community at large, has a way of emphasising what is important to teaching. And a body like the General Teaching Council tries to reflect the perception of what the public values in its code of professional conduct and the standards it sets for teachers. I'm not exactly sure how pupils themselves would contribute to standards. But what I would say is that professional standards have got to be visible to pupils, and pupils and parents have got to have some confidence that teachers are working according to professional standards that they have internalised.
OK, I'm going to ask Joan to come in now and then Rosa.
Yeah, one of the things that makes me laugh is everybody has a view on teaching. You know, because they were at school, and they, it doesn't matter which generation you talk to, right across the board, somebody has something to say about teaching. And usually that doesn't help either. You know, it's not a profession which people haven't particularly dipped into, but everybody's been in school and they have a view of teachers and they transfer some of that on. However, having said that, you know, the change, if you want, in the past, and if you take the people who are living today, the change in teaching has been dramatic. And if there was one thing that I could personally do is to go back to David Cameron's point there about getting confidence in teachers and beliefs, so that when teachers are asked to do things, like you mentioned, Rosa, they're asked to do things that they don't really believe in or they think it doesn't work, they say no, you know, and they know why, that they have that strength of the grounding in, first of all, the theory. What do the evidence and the research tell them? But more important, how well do they know their own children in their own communities? And what is the community's priority for these children? Because even within Scotland, a very small nation, there are variations on what you would place emphasis on. And that's the bit, I think, that I would want above everything else. I mean, we can write all the standards and we can set out the picture, but how do we get the confidence in the teachers to know and to make the decisions that they need to make? You know, that's what the autonomy bit is for me.
And that's a really good question. And one of the comments I want to make to that is from my experience of working with teachers, particularly on the Chartered Teacher Programme, but also SQH and other sustained learning and programmes, was that from where the teachers started these programmes and were learners again and engaging with critical inquiry, with research, with reflection, and always linked to practice. It wasn't something they were doing as a kind of satellite out there. And what we saw, and we did quite a bit of research on this ourselves at the council, was the professional confidence was the first thing to rise. The professional self-esteem, the feeling of confidence and courage to do exactly what you were talking about, Joan, that perhaps say no, or to say, why are we doing this? What is this about? What's your evidence base? And always at the heart of that, what difference will this make to learners? Because if it's not going to make a difference, I suppose the so what question, then why are we doing it? So confidence and courage, absolutely crucial in professional autonomy. And one of the experiences I've had, or one of the ways I've seen that really be enhanced, was through teachers being learners again and linking it to practice. I'm not saying it's the only, I'm saying it's the one I've had the most experience with and really saw the difference. And it was actually really very exciting and inspirational. It made a huge difference to the children in their classrooms.
David Cameron.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think I totally agree with the idea of teacher as learner. I think there's a few things that we need to recognise. I mean, one is we need to get away from the idea of the school and the teacher as defining young people's learning and education. You know, education is not what we deliver. It's what happens in young people's lives. It's what happens in adults' lives. We need to recognise that the model's changing. We need to be as conscious of capture as we are of delivery. We need to try and capture what young people are learning from their experience out with school, from their experience online, from research that they're doing, whatever. And we need to recognise and build on that, because the complexity that Gordon talks about isn't going to be addressed in the 1500 hours. It needs to be addressed through lifelong learning. And that's for us, that's for the youngsters that we're responsible for. And we need to think, I think, about education in a different way. It maybe takes us into this idea of what does education look like? What does a teacher look like in this new professional model? And part of the answer to that, apart from teachers now look frighteningly young, is that they look like people who listen, who take account, who think about and who build on, as well as people who design and offer opportunities for learning and impart knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Colleagues, I'm aware that we're coming close to the end of the show, and I know some people may have to leave us sooner rather than later. I'm going to pose one final question and leave it up to yourselves whether you'd like to answer that or whether you would just like to make a final contribution in terms of a kind of overarching statement on what you've heard tonight. There is still time, if you're listening to live stream, to get in touch regarding anything that you've heard during tonight's show. So you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk or post something on Twitter and include the hashtag edutalk. We should be able to pick that up before we finish. Just to say to panellists, if you do need to leave at any point in the next couple of minutes, that's absolutely fine. Just hang up and that's no problem at all. But I would like to invite you either to, you know, close with some comments or to actually directly answer our final question tonight, which I'll pose now and pose to Gordon Kirk first of all. Does a professional culture mean professional standards? And this will be appropriate because during 2012, the suite of professional standards are being updated, rewritten or torn apart. If professional culture does mean professional standards, what would they be and how would we ensure that these standards are I teach? So Gordon Kirk and David Cameron.
Absolutely. Professional standards are at the core of professional life. And the same applies to medicine, law, and engineering. And usually, these standards are set by the professional body. In the case of teaching, it's the General Teaching Council. In medicine, it's the General Medical Council. And these bodies set out what the professional expectations are of teachers, how they relate to their colleagues, how they relate to pupils, how they relate to the wider community, how they relate to their subject, and so on. So, I'm not saying teachers go about with the GTC Code of Professional Practice in their hip pocket. These, in a true professional, these standards are internalised. It's their way in which they relate to learners, and the standards by which they want to be judged.
Yeah, I mean, I think the professional standards give us a great opportunity about career-long learning and development. But I think professional standards go so far, and perhaps in the revision of these standards, what we're looking at is if we are encouraging a lot of dispositions, values, skills and abilities that go in the classroom and beyond within the standards, we also need to be bringing on board the rest of the profession out there so that we're not not in one set of standards and finding that that's not extended throughout the rest of the profession and other educational agencies. So I think it's a real challenge for us about systemic change as well, so that we're getting joined up in our thinking. And I just finish with, at the heart of the professional standards have to be values and dispositions, because I think they are as important, if not more, about who a teacher is and how a teacher is, who they are, as what they do.
Okay. I'd like to ask David to come in just now, and then we'll finish with Joan.
Yeah. I absolutely agree that we need our professional standards, and we need to get into a culture where we don't need to carry around any statements or standards in our pockets, that we're internalising them because we've agreed them and we've been part of formulating them. And I also agree that there are standards that are based on what young people are entitled to expect from being in schools and being engaged with teachers, and they're based on what communities can rightly expect from us, and that they should be based on a shared value framework. We need to be very committed around ideas about equality. We need to be very committed around ideas about fairness and respect, and we need to build on these, and any standards that we set need to flow from that, but they need to be standards. And I think that's the pattern, to be fair, through GTCS. They are standards that we've been engaged in shaping, but we do need to have them and we do need to be applying them.
Yeah, and I'll conclude quickly. I mean, two things for me strike me about anything that comes around out in the surround around professional standards. The one, that we get the whole notion of teachers getting feedback on a regular basis. We get that better. You know, it works in some places, it doesn't work in other places. It cannot be right that we are still hearing, you know, even the head teacher of a small school, not in the too distant past, saying to, you know, one of our inspectors, thank you for that. That's the first time in my professional life anybody has given feedback on what I think and what I do. So we've got the graphics working a bit better. And I suppose the second one is, let's use these professional standards out with the profession to tackle the whole issue of confidence, because we need people out there. We need the taxi drivers who offer a comment on what it looks, you know, what a teacher's job is. And I'm sitting here at the end of a conference in which I shan't name a famous chef has stood up on stage, and he has worked with a stereotypical view of what goes on in schools to a public audience. And let's get that. Let's get all that working right. Use the professional standards to let the children, the young people, their parents, their communities know this is what you've got. This is what you've got in your life. This is what you've got in your school. Let's use it to celebrate that.
I'd like to thank all our panellists for giving up their valuable time to take part in tonight's discussion around the professional culture of teaching. So my thanks go to Gordon Kirk, Rosa Murray, David Cameron and Joan Mackay. This audio will be available at edutalk.cc later on tonight, where it will be archived. Next week, EduTalk will be another very ambitious show. It's coming live from the University of Glasgow, and it will feature what I believe to be Professor Ian Mentor's final lecture in his time working in Scotland before he moves to take up a new post down south. That lecture is part of a teacher education, teacher work series, which I think is kind of set up to look at the Donaldson report and the kind of post Donaldson era. So I'm sure that'll be something of interest to our panelists and to listeners out there. And as I say, that will come live from 6 PM on Wednesday, the 14th of March. So thank you again to all our panelists. Sorry for the abrupt to the show when I press end in the Skype call. I feel it's quite rude, but I think it's the only way that I can actually end the live broadcast without us being caught out with any off-guard comments at the end. So thank you very much for taking part. Thank you for everybody listening out there. And until next time, take care.
Thank you.